Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing the show together. Together we welcome you. It's going to be Tuesday, whether we welcome you or not, but we do welcome you Tuesday. On this Tuesday, July 26, 2022, it's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. The radio station is 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, KVOI. The Buckmaster Show live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line. Courtney Sloniker is the executive director of the Southern Arizona chapter of the American Red Cross. It's summertime. Most of us thinking about getting away for a summer vacation. We're not thinking about donating blood, and unfortunately, that's a problem. Hi, Courtney. How are you?
Hi. Good afternoon, Bill and everybody. Thanks so much for having us.
So what is the situation? Summer is a real critical time for blood donation because people just are thinking of other things.
Yeah, Bill, I'm so glad you brought up the need for blood. You know, it's one point to make that the need for blood is constant. It doesn't change throughout the year. People are always in need of life-saving blood products. But specifically during the summertime, we have seen shortages historically because of what you said. People are traveling, they're getting out and about, they're enjoying their summertime, maybe escaping that Arizona heat. But blood donation is critically important all throughout the year. And the best way for us to address these summer shortages is to have regular ongoing donation appointments. So when you're thinking about those summer plans, you know, maybe you think about making that blood donation appointment before you head out.
How do you expand your donor base, Courtney?
Wow, Bill, that's probably the million-dollar question that every blood collection center across the country is asking. You know, a lot of reasons why people don't donate blood is because they've never been asked. And we are asking now. We are asking people to roll up their sleeve and donate blood. And I think I can speak, you know, on behalf of any organization collecting blood, is that we're asking people wherever you are to roll up that sleeve and donate. Blood is a perishable product, and it can only be received through generous donations of people, again, rolling up that sleeve and donating. And so, you know, your question about how do you expand that donor base, you know, I think it's simply asking the question, have you ever donated? Would you be interested in helping us save lives? And that's true here in Southern Arizona, in California, and across the coast. Every blood donation center needs more people to donate. We know that about 30% or so of the population is actually eligible to donate blood. So that means, you know, 70% are ineligible. That's a large portion. But of those 30%, on average, usually only 3 to 10%. Actually donate regularly. So if we can capture that other, you know, 20% or so, we'll be in a really good position.
Can teenagers donate blood, Courtney?
Oh, great question. And we have a lot of wonderful high schools here in Southern Arizona that host blood drives, and teenagers are donating. You do have to be 16 or older with parental consent, as well as meeting height and weight requirements to donate. So those are regulations, you know, set by the FDA. But, you know, as a 16-year-old or older, you are welcome to roll up your sleeve and donate and help save lives. However, just because maybe you're 15 or younger, you're in middle school, you still have a way to impact the blood supply. You can host blood drives and recruit your friends and family that are older that can donate. So there's a lot of great ways for our youth to get engaged in blood drives. Even if they're not eligible to donate just yet, they can make that critical question and ask people to donate on our behalf.
So I did not realize, Courtney, that 70% of the American population would be ruled out in donating blood. So what are the parameters for what would make someone eligible to donate blood, Courtney?
Yeah, great question on eligibility. So some of the basic eligibility requirements, really, you know, that you have to be healthy on your day of the donation. You have to weigh above 110 pounds. That might roll some people out. But there also are eligibility requirements around certain medications that you may be taking, or if you've had recent procedures, things like that. So there are some specific medical questions that we ask you to determine your eligibility. And if you're not sure if you're eligible to donate, you can give us a call at 1-800-RED-CROSS, and we can help answer those eligibility questions for you to see if you're eligible to donate. But there's a lot of criteria that goes into donating for the general public. That criteria is followed by all blood banks and set by the FDA. So the best thing to do to see if you're personally eligible is to just give us a call, and we'll walk you through the process and see if you're eligible. And if you're not eligible to donate, the next best thing you can do is ask someone you know, your friends, your family, to donate as well. So you might not be able to roll up your sleeves, but you can sure recruit a lot of donors and get them to donate.
Would a recent bout of COVID, does that eliminate someone? How does the whole COVID pandemic play into blood donation?
Yeah, that's a great question. COVID's obviously impacted all of us tremendously in our daily lives, and it has impacted the blood supply. If you've recently, been exposed to COVID, you've had COVID, we ask that you are symptom-free and feeling healthy, and that goes for any illness that you may experience. Maybe you catch the regular flu, you get the stomach bug, whatever it is. You have to be healthy on your day of the donation. And so it's the same thing with COVID, but we want you to be symptom-free and follow those CDC guidelines for the 5 to 7 days past your either exposure or your symptom-free and feeling healthy. It is important that you're feeling healthy on the day of your donation. You don't want to have any of those residual symptoms that could potentially cause a reaction for your donation. So again, whether you've had COVID, you've had an exposure, you've had the flu, you've had some other, sickness, you want to wait until you're feeling fully healthy and your body has had ample time to recover. So again, COVID or not, something else that you've been exposed to, you need to give your body that time to rest and recover before you make a blood donation.
We're speaking with Courtney Slonica. Courtney is the executive director of the Southern Arizona chapter of the American Red Cross. We haven't talked about plasma donations and how that differs from the regular blood donation.
Yeah, that's a great question, Bill. So we do collect platelets and plasma. Those are two blood components in your blood system. So you have three main components, your red blood cells, your plasma, and your platelets. And we collect plasma and platelets at our two donation centers here in Tucson. So you can visit our Foothills location over there on La Jolla and Ina, or you can visit us at Broadway and Kolb, where we do collect plasma and platelets. When we collect plasma or platelets, it's a little bit different process than collecting whole blood. When we collect one of those two products, we essentially take your whole blood out. It goes through a centrifuge process, and it separates those components, the red blood cells from the plasma and the platelets. And then we'll keep the platelets or the plasma, and your other blood components are then returned with a saline solution. So it does take a little bit more time than a normal whole blood donation, which the average donation time for whole blood is about 7 to 10 minutes. For plasma or platelets, you're looking at spending time with us for plasma about 50 minutes, and for platelets, usually you're with us about 2 hours. But we'll make you comfortable. You can catch up on that, Netflix show, that HBO show, and know that you're helping save lives. The platelets specifically have a 5-day shelf life. So when you donate platelets, the day you donate from the time that they're used by a patient, it's 5 days. It's a very, very short turnaround time. For whole blood, we can keep it for 42 days. And for plasma, we can store it for up to a year frozen. And so the platelets actually are a really critical item in Southern Arizona right now. We're only booking at about 68% when we really want to book to about 104%, knowing that some people will come in on their day of donation and be deferred. Maybe their blood is too high that day. Something else is going on. So our plea to all of you is, one, please consider donating. We're making the ask of you now, but also if you haven't considered platelets, it's a beautiful way to support people in need that need those products because of how short the shelf life is. And platelets are really important for cancer patients and burn victims as well.
Well, you'll walk out after you make the donation feeling really good about helping others. So how can we, shall we direct our listeners to the website? Is that the best way?
Yes, absolutely. If you would like to make a blood donation, whether that's whole blood, platelets, or plasma, you can go to redcrossblood.org. That's redcrossblood.org. You can type in your zip code, and we'll find the closest blood drive to you. It makes it really simple so that you're not having to travel very far to save a life. Or you can call us at 1-800-RED-CROSS, and we can book an appointment for you. If you don't like going on the Internet, no problem. Give us a call, and we'll book an appointment for you. 1-800-RED-CROSS.
Courtney, one quick final question that came in from a listener. Can you donate if you have had hepatitis A in the past?
Oh, that's a great question, Bill, that I don't have the immediate answer to. Let me see if I can get a quick answer for you. Otherwise, I'll be sure to follow up with you, Bill, so you can get with that listener on eligibility around hepatitis.
Yeah, and if during the show or even during the break, perhaps, if you can get that answer and just call back, and John will take the answer, and we'll help Carl get that answer, okay? Thank you, Courtney.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Bill, and thank you to all the listeners. You are the way for people to receive life-saving blood, so we couldn't do this imperative work without you.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks. Courtney Sloniker from the American Red Cross. We'll take a break right here. Shelley Fishman with me in studio. Oh, no. Buckmaster's back on a Tuesday, and the thumb down. Market's struggling. What else is new on a Tuesday with Buckmaster? We'll be right back.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Hi, this is Tom Sullivan. Join me weeknights from 7 to 10 for the Tom Sullivan Show on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And welcome back to the show. Welcome to Shelley and Shell. Before we begin your segment, Carl had a question right before the break that Courtney Sloniker was on from the Red Cross. And Courtney says, the best action, call 1-800-RED-CROSS. They'll know all the stipulations. You can tell them your particular history and then go from there. But it's a real important information, Shelley.
Absolutely.
About the Red Cross. All right. Tuesday, I was not here last Tuesday, and you and Jim Nintzel were talking on the air. It was funny. Oh, Bill's not here. That means the market must be really doing well. And it was like a gangbusters
day. It was
760
points.
But I am back. And where are we? We're, what, a couple hundred down?
A couple hundred points.
It's a seesaw.
It's down on some interesting bad news from one of the big retailers. And it's kind of interesting in what's going on. Consumers continue to spend heavily. There's plenty of cash around.
Yeah.
You know, debt is down. Consumers, but they're not buying because of inflation. They're not buying the stuff that a year ago large retailers were stocking up on because they had supply chain issues. So the inventories of these large retailers are stocked full of stuff nobody's buying. And as a result, the cost of those inventories and the fact that the stuff that consumers are buying are lower priced items is causing some of the forecasters in these retailers to say the third quarter might not be as robust as they originally thought, and that is scaring the heck out of people.
You have the answer to a question I have wondered about. Who declares a we are officially in a recession?
Oh, I do.
You're so officially going to tell us.
Okay, so the National Bureau of Economic Research really defines when a recession is to be called a recession or when a downturn is to be called a recession. The generic way we think about it is two consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth. However, that doesn't always do the job. What really has to happen is this bureau, the National Bureau of Economic Research,
needs to see
that other things in the economy are reacting to that negative growth in a way that is affecting people's behavior, or it is affecting things like whether they can get a job or not. So they look for increasing unemployment numbers and some other numbers, especially reduced spending, before they declare a recession. In some cases, they'll declare a recession after 1 month. Like for COVID.
Pandemic.
It was a very, very short recession, but they declared it a recession. They did the same thing in 2002 when we had the high-tech debacle in the stock market, and people were just selling stocks all over the place. So what has been suggested is, instead of just looking at GDP growth, take a look at the annual rate of gross domestic product and the annualized rate of gross domestic income. Average those two things together, and if they're down for a couple of quarters in a row, let's call it a recession. Again, not a hard and fast rule, but interestingly, we had about a 1.6% tightening of GDP in the first quarter, but at the same time, we had a 1.8% increase in income during that quarter. So the first quarter actually, on average, showed a small increase. We'll see this Friday what the second quarter shows. And even then, the numbers that we get in the month after a quarter is completed are always subject to revision. And we're going to see the first quarter revised. We'll see the numbers we see this Friday revised again and again. Those people who are declaring
don't bet on it.
With the strength in spending, the strength in employment numbers, this is not a recession, at least not yet.
Were you disappointed President Biden just didn't declare a national emergency on climate?
I was not. Disappointed that he didn't declare it because he kept bringing the subject to the forefront. That said, I really believe, as you know, that climate change is one of the fundamental mid- and long-term headwinds that this economy, and in the case of climate change, the world's economy is facing, that we absolutely have to deal with. Now, you know, you bring that up. There was an article written last week by Henry Olson in the Washington Post, in which he said, no, Biden shouldn't declare a national emergency on climate. You know, a national emergency is something that really deals with a one-time event.
Yeah, one-and-done event.
In that sense, Olson was correct. Now, Olson is a conservative columnist. Mm-hmm. He normally follows the Republican line on this. But where he went really, I think, off the deep end in this article is he said, not only isn't this a one-time thing that should be a national emergency, but any fixes that you have for climate change are going to be so damaging in ways we can't really appreciate or expect that we shouldn't do anything. That is a very, very bad advice. Bill, climate change, if we leave this alone, not in your lifetime or in my lifetime, will eventually bankrupt the world. This is so bad, and Olson didn't even begin to give us some numbers. You know what these fires cost? You know what these hurricanes cost? And that's only domestically. You take trillions of dollars or $1 trillion or whatever the number is every year out of our economy to pay for fixing the damage done by one-time, you know, 100-year floods or 100-year rains or 100-year firestorms.
100-year events every summer in California.
Exactly.
That's the way it's been year after year lately.
Right. So, you know, that money to pay for the fixing of that has to come from somewhere.
The health effects. The smoke. Breathe the smoke all summer in the San Joaquin Valley.
Exactly. And that is just building on itself. And that means that our economy will not be able to compete because of the spending on stuff that has no kind of cascading effects. So when you spend money, for instance, you build a bridge, you know, an infrastructure, and that bridge then creates a better way for people to travel. It creates more demand in certain ways. That's a good thing. When you're just fixing stuff that burned down, that has absolutely no effect over time, other than the fact that you had to spend the money to fix it. When we do that, when we see the effects of climate change internationally, and let's forget about for a second the first world, the economically developed world. Let's take a look at Europe, see what they're going through right now. I mean, Britain had some temperatures that you wouldn't believe.
104.
Yeah, I know. And they don't have air conditioning there because they don't need
104
it, right?
And in England. Who would think,
so, yeah. So, but if you take a look at the undeveloped world, the world that is not economically up mm-hmm. to par, if you will, and still mm-hmm. kind of emerging, you have large geographic groups of people who will not be able to live where they're living right now. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking about hundreds of thousands. We're talking about millions of people, maybe hundreds of millions of people who are going to need to migrate. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Mm-hmm. The doors to Europe and the United States will shut in their face.
Yep.
Where are they going to go? So this is going to cause wars. It's already caused one. Mm-hmm. It's going to cause famine. It's going to cause people to die in numbers that we have not seen since the Holocaust. It will make the Holocaust seem like a rounding error, as large numbers of people are just thrown out of their homes, thrown out of the geographic territory that they live in, and have to go someplace else, and the someplace else they need to go doesn't want them.
Richard just sent me an email. What about, he says, Shelley, what about China and their 1,100 coal plants?
Well, you know, China and their 1,100, it's no help. And but he's right to bring it up, because quite simply, this is not a problem we can fix on our own. Nevertheless, we can't ignore it on our own either, because, I mean, the Chinese are already dealing with floods and fires like crazy.
Yep.
They've got to stop doing that. We've got to, but it's got to start somewhere, and it's got to continue somewhere. Otherwise, and I, you know, Richard, I don't know how old you are, but at some point, 30 or 40 or 50 years from now, as this gets worse and worse and worse, and economies begin to collapse, the effects on not just the economies, but on people's daily lives is going to be so extreme that it's all we talk about.
All right, Shelley, going to leave it right there. This is,
that's a downer. I'm sorry, Bill.
Well, it's not a kick the can down the road issue. It's got to be addressed. Shell, thanks so much. Good to see you. You and Jim Nitzel had a great session, by the way, last Tuesday.
And a good stock market.
Yeah, it was a good stock market. You had a good trip to San Diego, too.
I did, yeah.
All right. Take a break right here.
Thank you, Bill.
Okay.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Tuesday edition, in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. All of the plants at Green Things say, thank you, Lord. We needed that rain. Maybe not as much as we would hope so far. It's the weirdest monsoon. When Zach is here, our climate guy, in a couple of weeks, we're going to have a lot to talk about. I mean, it's crazy. Tucson is getting virtually nothing. The other day, they up in the foothills, just above the like where homes are, they had 4 inches of rain in like an hour and like hour and a half. I mean, it's crazy. The storms basically are not making it into the valley. Let's hope it changed. But anyway, Green Things. Things are looking green. 3384 East River Road. Open daily. They've got everything you need on their 13-acre site for your garden. And start your fall planting now so you get some nice color for like September. Zocalo Village is there as well. All that great pottery from Mexico, Talavera Pottery. Their website, zocalovillage.com, greenthingsaz.com. Open daily. General Ted Maxwell joining us now in studio. He leads the Southern Arizona Leadership Council as president and CEO, been that role since 2018. His nearly 34 years of military service includes 15 years in active duty Air Force and an additional 19 in the Arizona Air National Guard. He retired as Major General in 2018. His final military position, Commander, Arizona Air National Guard. In 2021, Governor Ducey appointed the general to represent Pima County on the 7-member Arizona State Transportation Board. He's also the ADOT representative on the 9-member Regional Transportation Board of Directors here in Southern Arizona. In addition, he currently serves on the Governor's Water Augmentation, Innovation, and Conservation Council. General, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Bill. I always appreciate being here.
You had a nice visit back to my neck of the woods, Chicago, Wisconsin. I love Door County.
We got very lucky. The weather for 3 days when we were in Door County was as good as they've had all summer.
And it can be horribly humid, too. I mean, but you, what sounds like what you got, and we used to spend some time every summer, little lake, Lake Ripley outside of Madison. We had a cabin. But what you had is the taste of kind of the early autumn coming on. Yeah. I can just imagine it. The puffy white clouds, the cool mornings, that nice lake air, breezes. Anyway, perfect time.
The breeze was blowing to the east, and it was wonderful. We actually, when we were down in Chicago on the way out, was the only time we got one humid day. The rest of it was beautiful weather
in the Midwest. All right. The 55th Arizona legislature adjourned. It was a 167-day session. Were there some significant wins for Arizona job creators?
Well, there were some significant wins, really, for the economy as a whole. If you look at the size of the budget, it was one of the largest budgets this legislature's passed in several years, including $1 billion of investment in infrastructure, you know, over $1 billion going into education. They made a commitment to $1 billion for some water. So there's a lot of victories for the economy as a whole in that budget. And they did it at the same time where they can also claim, and factually correct, they lowered the tax rates that both corporations would affect as well as the citizens that were passed last year. And so there's a lot of things that you could point to as why you'd want to come to Arizona. And one of them is that issue. You mentioned the water before we start talking.
Water sustainability, that's a part of the deal, isn't it?
And they've put a lot of money and a lot of effort, or they're going to be putting a lot of effort into trying to come up with what the sustainability and what the solutions and what some of the alternatives are. You know, we've spoken before, and I told you, until the price of water gets up to what it probably should be, there's not a lot of incentive. But we've seen through the drought contingency planning and even this move here that we're starting to acknowledge that, hey, there is a cost to water.
What's the percentage or a guess that it's what it should be and where we are percentage-wise? I mean, are we 20% lower than what it should be?
We're much, much lower than that when you take a look at it, really. Right now, the first drought contingency plan, because there was water rights that were traded as part of the drought contingency plan so we could make the cuts and leave water in the lake. And it was right about $240 per acre foot. Now, an acre foot's about, I think, 76,000 gallons. So it's a lot of water. It's only $240. Well, they had to renegotiate that the payments for this second year of the drought contingency plan. It's already up to about $260. Realistically, until it's up about $1,000 an acre foot, things like desalinization just aren't fiscally viable. But as the amount of money that, or the amount of water that flows down the Central Arizona Project every year decreases, what that means is the cost of that water is going to increase because the fixed cost, the cost of the canal, the cost of the electricity, those aren't going to change. It's just going to be the amount of water coming down. So who's going to eventually have that pinch? It will be the users that use that water because the price is going to have to go up just to cover the cost.
If it goes up enough, will that stop? Not stop growth. It would be hard to imagine, Ted Maxwell, that Arizona would suddenly, that there would be growth stopping, but will it slow growth?
I think anything's possible, but the thing that people have to understand is for years we focused on, or there's been segments of Arizona that's focused on, hey, we don't want growth. We don't want growth. So the fact of the matter is, guess what? We're growing. People are coming here. There's a lot attractive about Arizona. There's a lot of that's attractive about Pima County. You've seen what the embracement of the growth and the people coming to the state has done for Maricopa County.
Oh, yeah.
It's 4.5 million plus folks now.
It's one of the largest metropolitan areas in the United States.
Absolutely. But they've got a lot to offer from there, too, in ways of their average income, their average household income. You know, obviously prices are more expensive out there than they are down here. That's one of the things Arizona, Tucson and Pima County have always said, hey, our cost of living's less. But along with it comes with the lack of some job opportunities. And that's why I think the investments that were made by the state, especially in education, especially in infrastructure, and then the fact that we are, the governor and the legislature said, okay, we're going to start addressing these water issues. Hopefully, kind of lead to some of that turn. I mean, it's going to be work. There's no doubt. We're a fast-growing state in a hot climate that has water concerns. And, you know, you mentioned the monsoons. We've had some incredible rainfall, but it's not distributed, and it's not necessarily all making it into our water basins either.
It is hit and miss.
It is.
Which is, I don't know, it's kind of typical of the monsoon. I mean, we all know the story about it's happened to us up in where we live in the central foothills, a block away, they could be getting a torrential rain and we'd get nothing.
Well, I'll tell you, flying in the summertime in Arizona is still incredible because we've got such great range space and so much airspace. But the afternoons in the Tucson area, you quite often were picking and choosing your route to get back to the airport or back to Davis-Monthan to land.
You were negotiating the giant cumulus that could go to 60,000 feet. So you don't want to go through that, I would assume.
And you don't try to climb over them because they climb really fast.
Yeah. All right. You brought in the legislative referrals. There are 11 ballot issues. I had no idea. There'll be 11 ballot issues on the 2022 ballot. Let's do kind of a brief overview, if you will, General.
So there's a lot of them you could almost put in different locations. Obviously, there was a lot of interest on the elections and how we do business politically inside the state. But just real quick, the legislature actually referred eight of these items to the ballot.
Okay.
Eight of them. You've got a Voter Protection Act, which is would allow the legislature to change what they do with the bill, normally under the Voter Protection Act, they can't touch it. But if this is found that there's something that's unconstitutional in it, then this will give them more leniency to go in and change it. Those in favor are going to tell you it makes it easier to keep things moving and make sure that the money is used effectively. Those who are against it are saying they're concerned that the legislature will change too much. Initiative, single subject title. This is a clarification bill or a proposition that will try to clarify what the definition of single subject means. Right now, that's one of the most common things that ends up having propositions or legislative action taken to court is that it's not a single subject. There's one on property tax exemptions. There's a lot of nuance to that one. One of the interesting ones, probably the listeners, is there is a Proposition 131 will allow the voters to vote if they want to have a lieutenant governor on the ballot.
That's the one Senator Mesnard's pushing, right?
This one that they're putting to the ballot will actually allow whoever wins the primary, any governor who's going to be on the ballot has to name their lieutenant governor.
Ooh.
So the other one was where it was more being a voted position.
Okay, so it'd be a ticket.
It'd be a ticket. So exactly that. It would be a ticket. The Proposition 132 is going to ask the voters if they want to establish a 60% supermajority for any initiative or referendum that would increase a tax, either an enact a tax or increase the tax. So that's kind of just setting a higher bar for initiatives that have taxes versus others.
You don't like that from a SALC position.
We were opposed. The bill initially was being going to be 60% on all.
Okay.
And this one is just for tax.
Okay.
And in general, SALC is taking a position that's probably going to oppose that. Prop 308, in-state tuition, post-secondary education. You probably already heard a lot about this one. This is the one that would allow for any graduate of the state of Arizona high school to attend state university at in-state tuition rates. And it really addresses undocumented students who have been here and gone through our school system. So already had a lot of investment made by Arizona taxpayers and just doesn't give them a free tuition. It gives them the opportunity to attend college at an in-state tuition rate.
Hold your thought there on the remaining five. We'll come back with General Ted Maxwell's Buckmaster on a Tuesday.
Nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com. Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Helping you make better money decisions is what The Ramsey Show is all about. Today at 1 p.m. on 1030 The Voice.
Welcome back. It is The Buckmaster Show. I want to send all of our listeners over to Silver City if you're looking for a place to cool off. We always say it's about 10 degrees, but you know, in the summer, quite honestly, there's been some days here where it's been 15 to 20 degrees cooler over in Silver City because they have such... Well, they're at a mile-high elevation, just like Denver, 79 over there right now. Beautiful. And they've had a ton of rain in New Mexico, one of the rainiest summers so far, I know, in the Albuquerque area and Silver City. So good time to go over there. Gila National Wilderness looking real green. Good time to go do some hiking. Check out Southwest New Mexico, spelled out .org for what to do. Lots to do, where to stay, some great places to stay in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. General Ted Maxwell now with me in studio in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We continue our conversation with General Maxwell, who is the CEO and president of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council, also a member of the Arizona Department of Transportation Board, but as the head of SALC, part of Ted's charge, his mission is to follow what's going on with laws and the state legislature. We've been going over 11 legislative referrals, which means, well, there's not 11 legislative referrals. There's three citizen referral initiatives out of the 11. But basically, Ted, General, there'll be a lot for voters to digest, right?
And Bill, that's the thing about these having 11 of these, they all will be at the end of the ballot.
Yeah.
I mean,
ballot fatigue by the time
there's ballot fatigue. There's lack of information. This is going to be a crowded media campaign for all the elections that are occurring this year. So some of these are going to get a lot more vision. I wanted to talk about Prop 309 just so your listeners were aware of it. That's the voter identification affidavit. And what that's going to do is ask the voters if they want to require for mail-in ballots, basically your date of birth and voter identification number. And it would also eliminate the two-document alternative to vote in person. In other words, if you're voting in person, you're going to have a photo ID of some sort. Now, it does prohibit ADOT from charging anybody a fee when they're issuing a non-operating identification license. So it should make it easier to get a photo ID of some sort. And there's multiple photo IDs that qualify. But that's, you know, that's the one of the ones that's going to be, you're probably going to hear a lot about. And there's an Arizona Fire District Safety Act that I won't go into. It's my point of bringing these 11 things forward is you're going to have to go out and learn about them. Some of them you're going to see news on, some of them you're not. If you want to be an informed voter, you've got to open that voter information guide and read about them. And it gets a lot more interesting, and this is probably where you're going to see a lot of money spent. The citizens' initiatives, three of them qualified by signatures this year, and they all had well over 100,000 extra signatures, so I think all three of them are going to qualify. Mm-hmm. One of them is the Voters' Right to Know Act. Most people consider this a dark money initiative. Mm-hmm. It effectively is going to make it that if there's a contribution of over $50,000 on a statewide campaign, even if it comes from a PAC or an organization, they have to declare anybody that gave more than $5,000 to them.
Yeah, this is former... Attorney General Terry Goddard's baby. We had him on the show a couple of weeks ago talking about it. He's been pushing for this for years.
And they this time I think you're going to see them on the ballot. They've been knocked off in court before. They've had other issues. But this one I think you're going to see on the ballot. There's one out there also referred to as the Predatory Debt Collection Protection Act. Some people have heard of it as the Hospital Debt Act. It's really much more than that. It really puts a lot of restraints on what people who have lent money can do when it comes to their collection of those funds. And everybody goes, well, that's maybe not a bad thing. If people are, you know, do not have as much income and they need it, you know, you're going to take things from. But the big implication is with all the openness, because it's not just hospital debt, it's any debt. It's a payday loan. It's a car loan. It's a, this limits what people can do to get that money back. And that's going to make the money available for people in need much more restrictive, much more difficult to get. It will make it nearly impossible for some folks to get money, which is going to force them to do either. It's going to not be good for their way of life as well as society.
Then there's this massive Arizonans for Free and Fair Elections. 50 changes?
Yes.
Arizona election laws?
Arizona for Free and Fair Elections is really an attempt at trying to push back against a lot of the things that the legislature wants to do, including some of the things that are on the other propositions. But the challenge, at least Ted's opinion on this one, is it's making more than 50 changes to Arizona election laws. I think it's going to have a hard time potentially standing up
that
in court.
One will be really hard to pass muster in the courts because of the you can only have a single topic
single subject
initiative. Yeah.
Now, the argument is it's only about elections, but the problem is 50 of them, you're going to find some that people like, you're going to find some that people don't like, and you're going to find people that are reversed on which ones they like and don't like. I think it's got a big lift in front of it. It may face a big court challenge, but the bottom line, Bill, is people going into this year's election more than ever need to be, well, not more than ever, they should do it for every election.
Sure.
But they need to be informed when they go to the ballot, and they're going to need to know that these propositions and initiatives are down ticket, and they need to go find them and make sure they vote.
All right. Now put on your Arizona Department of Transportation hat, General, because you are the Southern Arizona representative. What's good news about what's going on with our roads?
Well, the good news is we have a lot of funding. And the bad news is a lot of it's coming from the federal government. So that means it's a series of some of our taxpayer dollars at use. But I think many of us would feel infrastructure is the place to make that investment. The good news is the state legislature appropriated almost $1 billion, including $400 million, which we're going to try to leverage as the state transportation ADOT try to leverage to $800 million, which will allow us to complete I-10, all 300 lanes.
Good.
So there's a lot of funding that's out there and available. The bad news is our HERF funds and
highway
our revenues.
User transportation.
Our highway user revenue funds. Yeah, those taxes that we collect to do that were actually
going down. Right?
Yeah, they're down about almost 3% for the year from what we were looking at, or a little more than that. And so there won't be as much money coming to the counties and to the cities and to the state through those funds. But right now, the biggest challenge for our investment in infrastructure is the cost. The cost in the last 12 months has gone up almost 40% for road construction. And that's made it very difficult. We've actually turned down projects recently at the state board because the estimate and the amount of money available to complete the job is in some cases coming 67% under what's being bid. We had a project that the state had estimated to be about $8.5 million, got two bidders, 12.7 and $16 million on each. So they couldn't they couldn't even agree. And most of it has to do a lot of times with our rural projects and with the costs and the labor of getting the labor and the materials there.
Wow.
So,
all right. Remaining 30 seconds with you. Do you foresee the day, not too distant future, where we'll get on I-10 up to Phoenix and it will be three nice lanes all the way up?
I do. And I hope, therefore, all the environment around the interstates will also populate, make it a really pleasant drive to make. If we get this mega grant, which I think we fit all the requirements for it, I think you're going to see that. And the best part is the state will be able to do it as a single project, therefore saving money and saving cost. Now, for a couple of years, they were talking, they were hoping they'd be able to break ground about 24, maybe even earlier than that. And when that project's going on, there will be some challenges on I-10. There's no doubt.
It'd take a couple of years, probably.
Absolutely.
It?
Yeah. It's probably taken two, 3 years to complete.
All right, General Maxwell, good to see you.
Always enjoy it, Bill.
Thank you very much. We're going to end it right there. We thank General Maxwell for coming into the program, into studio today. Thank John on the other side of the glass. And we'll have Dave Ramsey with his very popular show on money after CBS News. Have a great afternoon.